basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Bryant for the win. Bang! James puts up the three. Oh, it's good.
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in. Goodbye.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And D, yesterday, we got some reporting from Jake Fisher on the Jonathan Kuminga situation regarding the Lakers being his preference over the Wolves and the idea that the Lakers would sign him and then reward him potentially next season. And the language around that's a little bit ambiguous, but perked my ears from the perspective of we haven't really heard this situation discussed from the idea. What if Kuminga takes a vet min with the Lakers? The pushback, allegedly, that he's had to a sign and trade is that those have to be a minimum of 3 years, and he doesn't want to lock himself into a three-year contract that he believes is less than his market value. Totally fair. But the only time you ever hear the vet mins be brought up are with teams like Minnesota or others, and not really with the Lakers. And so that idea of him being rewarded in the second year, perhaps, and next offseason speaks toward the potential for that. And so I wanted to use this as a kickoff point for what would be better for the Lakers and what are the next stages of team building. There's been the thought that the Lakers want to preserve or have their full MLE next season. My understanding of how that works is that they would need to be below about the $205 million threshold. The first apron is projected to be about $220.5 million next summer. We don't know that for sure. That's just a projection. But the Lakers would have to be right around there to be able to use the whole thing, because then that caps you at the first apron. Then that got me thinking, do we want to be capped at the first apron in the first place, right? And so you and I kicked this around a little bit yesterday. And so what's your view on the idea of, is it better for the Lakers to sign and trade for Kuminga, meaning that he's locked in for 3 years, but certainly at a higher salary than the vet min, or to go the vet min route with him?
There are so many different ramifications for this, Pete, that are interesting to me. I'd actually prefer to sign and trade for Kuminga because I would like to try to preserve not only the MLE for next offseason, but also potentially the biannual exception. I've done some math on this, Pete. I have a spreadsheet that projects all of next year's salaries and where the cap will be, where the tax line will be, where both of the aprons will be. And I've gamed out a roster where the Lakers would not include Vando in a trade now, but would stretch and waive him next offseason, and would still have the ability to use their full MLE, use the biannual exception, have two vet minimum players on the roster, one of them a real veteran and one of them a rookie level vet min guy, so someone who they would potentially draft with a second round pick or sign as an undrafted free agent potentially, and have everyone still on their books, including Sexton opting into his deal and being able to stay under the first apron, Pete. And so I would much rather get Kuminga in-house and have him sign to a good-sized deal. And mind you, Pete, the number I have Kuminga at for next season in this scenario is over the MLE. This is like at $16 million.
Which might be more than he gets. We'll see, but yeah.
Yes. I was trying to max out the dollars to give Kuminga now within a deal to make it favorable for him to come. And I've been doing this for a while, so this is independent of Jake Fisher's most recent reporting. But I would much prefer to have Kuminga slotted into a real salary slot now in order to preserve the MLE, to get another player on your roster to potentially slot everyone out or down a spot. The roster that I built for next season essentially has all of the guys who are expiring contracts for this upcoming season, right? So that's Jake, and it's all the vet minimum guys, all those guys essentially turning over, and that the Lakers then keep their young players. They would still have Thero in this situation. They would still have Bronny. They would still have, obviously, Cameron Carr. And then you bring in an MLE level guy that would get you closer, and then you even bring in a biannual guy that would get you even closer to that. And then all of those guys are just in a blood war
for minutes,
mm-hmm. and you build the best team that you possibly can. And so I get the Kuminga, it'd be great to get him on a minimum now, but if you just have to give him the MLE next summer in order to retain him, I don't think that's actually the best use of resources mm-hmm. for the Lakers in the big picture.
I totally see that argument. Is there also an argument to be made, though, that if you were to get him for a minimum now, you could trade, say, Dalton and Hardy for Jalen Smith, or kind of build out the team more now for this year's team, and then give Kuminga that MLE there? And then a two-part question. The thing that concerns me on this is the difference between the first apron and the second apron is about $14 million, maybe 13 and a half. So first apron next summer is supposed to be 220.5, then the second apron right around 234. Using the MLE would cap the Lakers at the first apron. Would it be better to go over the first apron and then at that point you have, is that the taxpayer MLE at that point? And so that's like
yes.
9.3 or maybe it's up to 10 million or so.
No, the taxpayer MLE for 2028 projected is only 6.4 million.
Oh, that's right. Excuse me. I got that confused with the room exception that
yes.
the Lakers signed right. Sexton with. So that's a significant difference. So is there value in sort of, because Vando should have some trade value next offseason as an expiring contract, and certainly would be less of a you got to pay to get off him type of guy. And the Lakers being under that first apron before then, right, would allow them to take back, I think, up to 20 point something million dollars in exchange for Vando. Is there value in going over the first apron and sort of, because that's my understanding of what they want to do is use this next bit of salary to get all the way up to that second apron, but they also want to have that flexibility to be able, they don't want to find themselves in the position of Denver or OKC or like Orlando not having much flexibility at all. So how do you view that, like the idea of being over the first apron and bumping up against the second?
So I am totally fine with not hard capping yourself at the first apron next summer and not using your MLE. That to me, though, depends on what sort of wink and nod agreement you have with Jonathan Kuminga. Because is he coming here now on the minimum in order to take the tax MLE
no
next
way.
Summer?
No way.
Right? Is he going to be a good Gary Trent and take the minimum for 2 years?
There are no rules anymore, Dave.
In order for him to sign an early bird contract where he'll likely be making the MLE essentially in his third year with the Lakers, but he's got to eat the minimum for 2 years. That's what Trent did with Milwaukee. I don't think Jonathan Kuminga wants to do that either in his ages 23 and 24 season, just to essentially cap himself out at a contract that's in the $16, $17 million a year range. His player option was for $23 million or something like that this season. Now he doesn't have a contract at all.
The team option.
Mm-hmm. And so for me, Pete, your scenario of, hey, let's not hard cap ourselves at all at the first apron, and let's just try to be a team that pushes closer to the second apron. I think you're more able to do that now if you still do a sign and trade for Kuminga. So let's take an early break, and when we come back, I'll lay out that scenario for you. So, Pete, let's just say that in my little world of cap machinations, I'm trading Dalton and Hardy in order to pay Jonathan Kuminga anywhere between $15 and $17 million next season. And in doing so, I'm like, great, I signed Jonathan Kuminga to a three-year, $48 to $50 million contract. And people might roll their eyes at that, but let's just do that. You then have Vando on your books. If you then trade Vando, you can, and this is where it gets tricky, because if you take back more money in a trade, then you are again hard capped at the first apron. And so it can be tricky in this environment that I'm talking about here. But if you trade Vando at that point, and I think his salary for next season is
13 point something. Yeah.
Yeah. 13.2, almost 13.2. Three. If you could trade Vando for a like salaried player and then use the tax MLE, you're doing the same thing that you're describing, but any scenario where you're trading Vando and taking back more money, you're also hard capping yourself at the first apron. And so I'd rather have the ability to get Kuminga in now and preserve the bigger salary slot with possibly having the full MLE at my disposal, and then trading Vando for more salary to take back, and then using my tax level MLE or something, right, in order to have a certain amount of spending power and just eat it at the first apron being capped, if that makes sense.
I want to take this in a different direction, just because I feel like one of those gifts where like the math symbols are swirling around.
Yes, for me as well.
When I look at this Lakers roster, and one of the things I'm excited about with this year's team is I know less about it than any Lakers team in several years, just because there's so many new players. So we will see how this ends up working out. But I feel like they've got a ton of mid-level contracts. And if Kuminga signs to the proposed deal that you're talking about, he adds to this pile of Mamu, Grimes, Kuminga, Sexton to a degree as well, of these mid-sized contracts that I think are reflective of the caliber of players that they are. I think that, like, one of the things I'm excited about with this year's team is the bench, for example. But when I think about what this Lakers team needs in terms of talent to be able to get to the next level, I'm much more of the mind of, it would be great to at some point have a consolidation trade where, like, two of those players go out, maybe one of the young guys, and get a really good player that's in that $30 million type of range that is a bona fide starter the way that we view Kessler, right? Who I view on a different tier than Grimes and Mamu and Sexton. And so is there even value in adding another MLE level player, or are they just sort of like that fifth player that's sort of this midsize, sort of a starter, sort of a bench guy?
This is a great conversation, Pete, because of the idea of the two transaction cycle mindset that you and I have been talking about a fair amount with the Lakers and building out the best team that they can have, not only for this upcoming season, but for the beginning of next season, which are the next two cycles, right? It's this upcoming trade deadline and the offseason. And to me, Pete, one of the reasons why I would love to get Kuminga in now as a salary slot. So let's just say that we do the trade that I was talking about with Hardy and Dalton going out and then Kuminga coming back in and making $15 or $16 million. You then have an expiring contract in Jake and you have basically 2 years left of Vando. And in February, the exact trade that you're talking about here is one where I'd be like, okay, can you get something for Vando and Jake that pushes you closer to that $20 million player that you're talking about? Or next offseason, can you combine Vando with a young player and then one of those regular size contracts, right? And then the money for the player that you traded out, let's just say in this scenario, you're trading Mamu away. Like, this is just fantasy land stuff that I'm talking about. But you trade those three guys out, Vando, Mamu, and a young player, Adu, and you get back a $30 million player. And then you're like, okay, what do I have now? And then use my tax MLE, and you did consolidate, right? And I think there's real value in that mindset, Pete, to say, like, all of these players and all of the team building machinations that are at the team's disposal, they need to have contingency plans for all of this stuff. And this is one of the things that I actually think Rob is good at.
Me too.
So I would imagine that these are all sort of ideas they have and that they've mapped out multiple ways. But to me, Pete, if they don't get the power forward now, then you get pushed into a corner a little bit about what pieces you actually have. So to your point, if it's the choice between no Kuminga at all or Kuminga on the minimum, and then I have to deal with whatever it is next offseason, I would do that for sure. And then I would just give him the MLE or whatever it takes to keep him. Like, I would work with him in that scenario. And then if I need to try to make a trade, then I would do that at that point. The Lakers will see what they look like at the end of this season in terms of how close they actually are. But if they do get their power forward, like Kuminga in-house, and whether it's on the minimum or not, they'll at least get a year's worth of data to say, hey, this really works. He really fits with us. And we can now give them the MLE, and now that gives us flexibility to say, what can we package in order to try to get the starting shooting guard that we actually want? Or, like, because we now have the starting power forward. Like, you know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. It has short-term effects, and it has that longer-term effect of... One of the things that's valuable about this upcoming season and why I think it's important to fill that forward spot is it allows you, I think, to evaluate everybody properly. I don't expect every new player that they got to hit. And I expect there to be a spectrum between guys that, and then some guys that maybe we don't expect. Maybe this is Zaire Williams' time to really shine and step forward and grow in his career. And he's part of the long-term future in ways that we might not consider him to be now. And getting Kuminga in, I think, fills every major hole on the roster. Maybe not to a championship type of degree, but it allows you to evaluate in ways where going from there, that's where the guys that you trade out from that point on can help you get the $30 million player. It's sort of the everybody else, and you keep the guys that work. But that doesn't happen if you aren't able to get him in house now. So let's go to our second break here. And you brought up something that made me chuckle in the whole team building idea that I wanted to ask you about.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So along with news today that Benedict Mathurin looks like he's headed to the Pelicans on a two-year, $16 million deal. He's one of those guys that I think more highly of than apparently the NBA does. But we've also seen DeMar DeRozan sign with the Nuggets and Klay Thompson get bought out and head to Miami. And as you rightly pointed out, in the not-too-distant past, the Lakers would have been all over both of those dudes, and were, right, to varying degrees. Most famously and recently with Klay a couple of years ago, with being one of the three players that LeBron said that he would take a pay cut for. They weren't even on the radar for either of those guys. And the direction of the team building this summer was polar opposite of that. So just want to get your thoughts on just sort of a new point of view, I think, from the Lakers front office.
Yeah, this is something that was on my mind a fair amount in the aftermath of the DeRozan news and then with Klay, right? And I know that Michael, Klay's dad, was online and fans were in his ear like, hey, get Klay to come. And I think even if Klay would have walked with his dad to Rob Pelinka's office and been like, hey, how you doing? This is my son, Klay Thompson. You guys may know each other. Rob might have been like, hey, Klay, how you doing? It's good to see you. All right. See you later, Michael. I got to go. That's what it feels to me, that Rob's perspective on team building, whether or not this is a short-term sort of idea or this is a more lasting idea, it feels to me, Pete, that he's pivoted away from the old guy building through veteran name brand dudes that he's been attracted to in the past. And one of the ideas I was wondering that I wanted to get your thoughts on was if you think that's a relic of the LeBron and AD era. Because when the Lakers were chasing Klay Thompson, it was with AD in-house. And obviously, it was with LeBron still here. And that's when DeRozan was rumored to be a guy here, too. It was in complement to the team's older and aging superstars. Like, oh, you're one of us. We'll usher you in to play this style of basketball. And it really does feel like Rob has identified this idea of, no, our two best players are 27 and 28 years old. I want guys who are in between 23 and 29, essentially, to be their running mates and to play next to those guys. I don't want a 35-year-old shooting guard or a 36-year-old small forward slash power forward guy. Like, those aren't the pieces that we want or need anymore. And to me, that's telling for the team building idea, but it's also this sort of interesting battle against conventional thinking of you get closer to winning a championship with veterans and experience versus younger, maybe less experienced, less seasoned guys who don't have the history of making deep playoff runs?
I think there's been somewhat of a change of philosophy across the NBA that the Lakers are more and more aligning with, in that what you just described for the longest of times has absolutely been the view of how you win titles, is that you don't do it with kids, you do it with veterans, and it's better to have somebody who's a little bit over 30 than somebody who's a little bit under 25 in terms of actually being able to get all the way to the championship. But I know that more and more this is viewed as a young man's league. We had his talk on and talked about the motor league. Who are the guys that have the most motor? It's their guys in their 20s. And if you look at the rotations of the last several NBA champions, you won't find many 30-year-olds in them. There's one or two per team normally, but it's mostly players in their 20s. And so more than ever, I think that being over 30 is viewed as being a liability. In terms of the reasons why behind that, I think is both a Pelinka and a LeBron thing. I think that one of my memories of the disastrous 21-22 team was Pelinka in the film room addressing the whole team and being like, this is maybe the greatest collection of talent assembled, because it's got Rajon Rondo in there and Carmelo Anthony, and Dwight was on that team for part three. And he was very proud of building that team, not just getting Russell Westbrook, of which I think that's a more complicated story, but just the overall, like, we know who that guy is. We know who that guy is. Trevor Ariza, you're a brand name 3-and-D type of wing. I think that being burned by that has changed Pelinka's point of view. But as I was telling you the other day, I am not entirely sure even still what Pelinka believes in. I have my thoughts on the type of players he's attracted to, and certainly I think combo guards, and there's an array of players that I think that he likes. But I think way more than that, he is trying to synthesize what his star player wants and what his coach wants. And with LeBron, I think we even saw this with the team that he chose this summer. I think LeBron is attracted to those brand names as well, guys that have a certain amount of cachet that he feels like he can go to war with. And I think Philly was the best team of all in terms of name guys that we really know can play. And so you flip that to Luka, what do we know about the type of team that Luka works best with and what Luka wants around him? There's a certain amount of athleticism, and it's less, I think Luka has less of an attraction to a name type of guy and more like, are you going to run? Can I throw you lobs? Can you play defense and do all of these things? And so I have a hard time pinning down exactly what Rob believes and what he doesn't. But I do think that Luka being the star in here and it being not at all motivated by what LeBron wants, I think that plays a factor too.
Yeah, the idea of being a shapeshifter as a player is something that we've talked about a ton. I think Rob, to a certain extent, is a shapeshifter as a general manager with his basketball philosophies and really trying to adapt would be the kind way.
Yeah, that's a generous way of putting it. There's a certain amount of stand for something, damn it, you're supposed to be our basketball guy from the team perspective, but
yes,
but being adaptable is a good thing.
It is. I think that it's more of a good thing when it comes on the merits of the shifting tides of like how your organizing thoughts around basketball evolve as the game changes. Right. So it's just like the way that Greg Popovich was sort of just like, hey, this two bigs massive jumbo ball thing that we did when I had Tim Duncan play next to David Robinson and then play next to Rasho Nesterovic. He just kept having Duncan basically be power forward,
Matt Bonner,
two big groups. Yeah. But then actually, a player like Bonner started to signal Popovich's evolution as well, right? In terms of spacing and the more like Eurocentric ball movement, point one philosophy that Steve Kerr started to incorporate in with the Warriors stuff and the way that they beat the Heat in the finals in the mid-2010s, where it's just like, no, I've got to do this other thing now. And that's how we're going to win. It's one thing when you're in that mindset. It's another thing when you're the single dude out at the bar And then you find yourself trying to hit on the hot girl that's at the bar, and you're just like, oh, so what do you like? Oh, you're in the books and novels? Yeah, what's your favorite book? How do you like these things? And then the next time you go, the person's into movies or they're into sports.
That's now shape-shifting suddenly... in a negative way, right? It's like, you're kind of full of shit, right? And Popovich was never trying to do that to make anybody else happy. It was motivated by his own basketball beliefs.
Yeah, and ultimately, the through line is trying to win. And I think Rob is trying to win, but I also think he's trying to win in multiple ways. He's trying to win the championship. He's also trying to win job security. And I think he's trying to win comfort level with the superstar player. And I think he's trying to win in terms of alliances that he can build, both with his head coach and with his best players. This is smart. And I'm not saying that this is bad inherently, right? But when you say, I don't know what you care about necessarily, what is your basketball ethos? There are some things that I do know that he appreciates. There are also things that I think he ignores to a certain amount. You sent me this cool little graph that showed how Walker Kessler and Kevon Looney can impact rebounding for your team, for example. If I were to ask you, Pete, besides Luka Doncic, who's the next best rebounder or someone who you feel like values rebounding as a stat on the entire team, who would you point to besides Looney and Kessler?
Bro, this has been a thing for years where they put no value at all in perimeter rebounding, especially. And you look at Gabe Vincent and all these guys, it's like, how do you have a 3% rebounding rate? The ball should bounce to you 3% of the time, and we'd have multiple guys on the team. So no wonder we can't get a freaking loose ball.
I look at a player even like Rui, or even a player like Jonathan Kuminga, for example. Mm-hmm. Lakers obviously had Rui for a long time, and he was productive, and I liked Rui just fine. But similar to Jonathan Kuminga, I would make this same argument. How many traits about the player do you talk about as being positives for them before you get to rebounding?
Yeah.
And would you even say rebounding is a strength for that player? Even for Kuminga, I wouldn't say he's a good rebounder.
Despite being an athlete and strong and all that, it's just not what he puts his efforts into.
He might get 5 a game or whatever, but again, when you're that athletic and you're that big and fast and strong, you could probably get 8 or 9 a game if that was something you actually wanted to do or something you had a nose for. And so, again, this isn't to disparage Pelinka, but it's interesting to me that he does seem like a different talent evaluator in terms of the things that he values. Just when I thought about the Clay signing and when I thought about the DeRozan signing, it just made me chuckle and made me think how these were totally the sorts of guys the Lakers would have been after just 18 months ago. And now I feel like they weren't even on their radar at all. And I think the Lakers are better off for it being that way, but I'm wondering if this is a permanent shift or if it's just a connection to what his superstar wants and how he's trying to align himself with what's gonna best serve Luka. And that's not a bad thing, but where is your own vision within the context of this? And it's just something that intrigues me from a team building perspective, because he is the guy that has to complete the roster. Yeah. And it can't just be based off of what your best player wants or says that he wants, because that can get you in trouble. We've seen it firsthand with the Lakers.
For sure. And it certainly indicates a change. We'll see how permanent that is. All right, going to wrap up here a little bit early. We will be back tomorrow, talk more hoops. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
3 seconds left. Van Exel, the winner. It's on the way.
Good! Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal! Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a 3-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
two, one, miss it!
Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes! And that was a little tough to Albert Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.